Of almost infinity. To those brought up on the myth, nothing seems more normal, more natural, more plausible than that chaos should turn into order, death into life, ignorance into knowledge. And with this, we reach the full-blown myth. It is one of the most moving and satisfying world dramas which have ever been imagined. The drama proper is preceded, do not forget the Rheingold here, by the most austere of all preludes. The infinite void, and matter endlessly, aimlessly moving to bring forth it knows not what. Then by some millionth, millionth chance, what tragic irony, the conditions at one point of space and time bubble up into that tiny fermentation which we call organic life. At first, everything seems to be against the infant hero of our drama, just as everything always was against the seventh son, or ill-used stepdaughter in a fairy tale. But life somehow wins through. With incalculable sufferings, the sorrows of the Volsungs were nothing to it, against all but insuperable obstacles, it spreads, it breathes, it complicates itself. From the amoeba up to the reptile, up to the mammal. Life, here comes our first climax, wantons as in her prime. This is the age of monsters. Dragons prowl the earth, devour one another and die. Then the old irresistible theme of the younger son or the ugly duckling is repeated. As the weak, tiny spark of life herself began amidst the beasts that are far larger and stronger than he, there comes forth a little, naked, shivering, cowering biped, shuffling, not yet fully erect, promising nothing, the product of another millionth, millionth chance. His name in this myth is Man. Elsewhere he has been the young Beowulf, whom men at first thought a dastard, or the stripling David, armed only with a sling against mail-clad Goliath, or Jack the Giant Killer himself, or even Hop o' My Thumb. He thrives. He begins killing his giants. He becomes the caveman with his flints and his club, muttering and growling over his enemy's bones, almost a brute, yet somehow able to invent art, pottery, language, weapons, cookery, and nearly everything else. His name in another story is Robinson Crusoe, dragging his screaming mate by her hair. I do not exactly know why. Tearing his children to pieces in fierce jealousy until they are old enough to tear him, and cowering before the terrible gods whom he has invented in his own image. But these were only growing pains. In the next act, he becomes the true man. He learns to master nature. Science arises and dissipates the superstitions of his infancy. More and more he becomes the controller of his own fate. Passing hastily over the historical period, in it the upward and onward movement gets in places a little indistinct, but it is a mere nothing by the timescale we are using, we follow our hero on into the future. See him in the last act, though not the last scene, of this great mystery. A race of demigods now rule the planet, in some versions the galaxy. Eugenics have made certain that only demigods will now be born. Psychoanalysis, that none of them shall lose or smirch his divinity. Economics, that they shall have to hand all that demigods require. Man has ascended his throne. Man has become God. All is a blaze of glory. And now, mark well the final stroke of mythopoeic genius. It is only the more debased versions of the myth that end here. For to end here is a little pathetic, even a little vulgar. If we stopped at this point, the story would lack the highest grandeur. Therefore, in the best versions, the last scene reverses all. Arthur died. Siegfried died. Roland died at Roncevaux.